I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm talking today with Michelle Stumpy. She's the president of the Great Ape Project. She's an attorney in Atlanta, Georgia. I want to talk to you about the Great Ape Project, which I have been a supporter of ever since I got involved in bioethics back in the 90s and read the Great Ape Project book and became a fan of Peter Singer's work in that area. And I want you first to tell us a little bit about the origin of the Great Ape Project and of the Declaration.
Okay. The Great Ape Project was founded in the early 1990s by Paolo Cavieri and Peter Singer, and I think that the philosophy behind the Great Ape Project is a recognition that there are so many animals, including the great apes, that are not protected, and that really there's a recognition that in order to achieve the kind of protections that they need, the best means is through legal rights. And so that's where the idea for the Declaration came up, and our goal towards pursuing the legal rights, the legal protections for the great apes in particular, as ambassadors. As you know, as many people know, Peter Singer is an extraordinary advocate for animal rights for all animals, but he recognized, and we recognized, that we've got to start one step at a time, and there's an abundance of research, scientific and otherwise, that supports the great apes as having a multitude of qualities that are deemed morally significant. So they seemed like the natural choice to start with and to provide, to be ambassadors, to open the door to people recognizing these as individuals rather than mere property, which is what they are now.
Which species are we talking about when we talk about the great apes?
We're talking about orangutans, gorillas, bonobos, chimpanzees. I think I got them all.
And the other things that people would associate would be monkeys, and they're in a different tree.
Right. That's a different. That is a different.
Branch of the tree.
Well, exactly. It's a different kind of branch of the tree. The great apes are considered to be the primates that are most closely linked to humans and have the same sentient qualities that humans have. And a lot of people, one of the easy ways to kind of distinguish is the great apes don't have tails. Most monkeys do. So.
And just this week, there was a study that showed that chimpanzees were actually closer to humans genetically than they were to the other great apes.
Yes, yeah, it's actually quite interesting. There is the DNA testing and all of the genetic testing that they've done has shown that chimpanzees do share more of those commonalities with human beings than they do anybody else.
Now, there are two different categories, I guess, of the work that you do. One is to try to bring attention to habitat preservation. I understand you do some work on that. And the other is great apes in captivity. Let's talk a little bit about habitat preservation, where the majority of the great apes are still free. And what are some of the methods that you're pursuing to encourage habitat preservation?
Well, there's a whole host of ways to do that, because you have issues with the bushmeat trade, which is not as much of a habitat. You know, a lot of people don't associate bushmeat trade with problems with habitat preservation, but what we're finding is, for example, you have these logging companies that go in, they destroy the habitat, but they also provide transportation for the poachers who are then going in and using the logging trucks to not only get into the forest, but also to transport the gorillas or the chimpanzees that they've killed back out into the urban areas, and that allows them to kill more and to profit more from what they're doing.
So in terms of bushmeat, tell us again what bushmeat is.
Well, bushmeat is the poaching or the killing of the great apes for use as food. And that is a significant problem that we have, particularly in Africa, where You have the poachers who go in. Unfortunately, gorilla meat is considered to be a delicacy in some circles, and so you have a very high price that is paid. In addition, the infants are a very valuable resource because there's a lot of money in the pet trade or, unfortunately, sometimes in the zoo trade in other countries.
So I'm sorry, I cut you off in terms of what you're doing to encourage the habitat preservation. You said that the loggers are going in and logging, and that that's opening up avenues for this bushmeat poaching.
Correct. That allows for many of these poachers easy access into the forest and also allows them an easy way to transport what they've killed back into the larger areas where they can sell it for a nice profit. There's also some problems with urbanization, and you have just humans moving closer and closer to the habitat, and not only are you having problems with the destruction of the forest, but you're also having the humans bringing diseases and other problems to the great apes, who are then catching the illnesses from the humans that are living now in closer proximity to them.
And vice versa, since that's one of the theories of where HIV came from.
Well, that's true. It's an interesting segue, I guess, because there's been so much testing on chimpanzees with HIV, and they've infected huge numbers of chimpanzees with HIV and have found that they don't respond the same. They don't develop the same illnesses as humans do, and so we now have a large population of chimpanzees who are living in solitude and living a very horrible existence because they've been used as the guinea pigs, if you will, of the HIV studies.
Does the Great Ape Project have a position on zoos? One of the connections here would be that, you know, some people would think, well, if the habitats are disappearing, why don't we get some of these chimpanzees, keep them in zoos, and then we'll preserve the species that way?
Well, I think that there's a common misperception. A lot of people would say that zoos are, they provide a lot of educational opportunities, and certainly the Great Ape Project is in favor of education to help enlighten humans as to the characteristics that the great apes possess. The problem is that many zoos are not as educational, the research shows, as people might believe. Ideally, if the apes cannot be in the wild and have a healthy existence there, the next healthiest environment is going to be in a sanctuary where everything is based upon what's in the best interest of the apes that are in their care. Unfortunately, have more overriding principles such as making money and being able to support themselves. Having said that, the Great Ape Project is very supportive of working with zoos to provide as healthy and enriched an environment as can be provided. We recognize that zoos exist. We recognize that there are great apes that are living in zoos and won't have the benefit of going to sanctuaries. And so we take a very realistic approach and say we want to be able to do what we can to help all of the apes that are in existence to have as enriched and fulfilled a life as they can possibly have.
You just completed a census of the great apes in captivity in North America, more than 3,000 you found. Did that include apes in zoos as well as in experimental facilities?
Yes, it does. Unfortunately, about 1,200 of those are in research facilities.
And let's talk a little bit about the research end of this. I know that the European Union has enacted fairly restrictive laws about what kind of research you can do on great apes, precisely for the kinds of rights issues that the Great Ape Project is targeting. Is the European Union a model for the way that the U.S. should go? Does the U.S. also have good regulations? Where are we going with the regulatory environment?
Well, the U.S. regulations are not nearly as proactive as some of the European regulations. New Zealand has recently passed some statutes that provides that if there is experimentation, it must be in the interest of the individual, not for somebody else's interest. And we have similar legal vehicles in India and Sri Lanka that have provided for protections there is no concept currently of legal rights, and that's where we would like to go because that provides the ultimate protection. Again, however, we're realists and we understand that we may not be able to accomplish that in one fell swoop, and so we also support other legal measures that would protect the great apes maybe in other ways. For example, bans on ownership, allowing the great apes to be appointed guardians if there's a question about what's going on and whether or not it's in their interest. We do have a status of the state laws that was updated last year available on our website, and it has a pretty good up-to-date status on the state-by-state laws with respect to animal rights and great apes in particular.
The New Zealand, they enacted some pretty good laws. Can you tell us about that one?
Well, those primarily are the laws that protect the great apes and prevent anybody from doing any kind of experimentation that is not deemed to be in the best interest of the individual. And there's been some real movement by the judiciary over there that has started to recognize that the great apes really are sentient, that they do possess the moral qualities that maybe they should be entitled to rights. So there is some discussion. New Zealand seems to be one of the most proactive in really moving forward with the idea of legal rights and aggressive protections for the great apes.
Let's talk about that sentient argument. And I'm speaking with Michelle Stumpy. She's the president of the Great Ape Project. She's an attorney in Atlanta and the a principal and the Avindi Incorporated Consulting Organization. And I'm Jay Hughes. This is Change Surfer Radio. The argument that originally captured my attention was an argument that was close to the heart of many bioethical concerns. Arguments about abortion and brain death and so forth are all around this question of personhood. And the central argument that the Great Ape Project has promoted is that what should confer rights is not genetic humanness, but actually these personality characteristics, cognitive characteristics that the great apes share with human beings. Is there progress being made in forwarding that argument? I don't see yet an impact in most of the human rights discourse to liberate itself from the speciesism that it kind of underwrites it. And in fact, right there in the UN Declaration on Human Rights, it says that our common shared humanness is what confers rights upon us.
Right. And that's, you know, one of the problems is that it is limited to the distinction as a human being. Interestingly, a corporation is deemed to be a human with respect to the rights that are provided to a corporation. They're considered to be legal persons, I guess I should say. And yet the great apes are not given that recognition. And when you look at the research and the science that has progressed over the years, we have seen that the great apes do share some very morally significant qualities. They plan for the future. They remorse over the past. They experience pain. They experience pleasure. They have social organizations with each other. They look forward to social relationships and interactions. And, you know, it's one of the things that I wish everybody could have had the opportunities that I've had in the past to actually work with some of these amazing individuals. I've worked with orangutans, chimps, and chimpanzees and gorillas. And it's amazing when you see them teaching you how to play a game and then laughing and recognizing things and learning how to open a coconut even though they've never been given one before, using tools and experiencing, you know, planning and playing jokes on you. It's an amazing experience to see the kind of sentience that they truly do possess.
Stephen Weiss is an attorney at Harvard, or he's in Boston at any rate, and he's been promoting an idea of having a kind of cut point of sentience above which we would confer the rights that the Great Ape Project is arguing for, and he would put above that line dolphins and elephants and parrots. He finds that there's a lot of ethological evidence for parrots having these cognitive characteristics. Is that an approach that the Great Ape Project is sympathetic with? It seems a more radical position than trying to argue for great apes, which look a lot like us and are a lot easier to argue for than a parrot.
Right. And certainly, the Great Ape Project is not to exclude legal protections or legal rights for any other species. It's just we, as a group of lawyers, we're very logical and practically minded. And, you know, one of the things, and Stephen Weiss is a very logical and practically minded person as well, but when the Great Ape Project was founded, the thought was great apes being an ambassador, not being necessarily being the only species that would ever obtain these protections or these rights, but an opportunity to open the door because it is so clear. It is a very easy kind of argument based upon the research that was available then and continues to be available and progress as we learn more and more about them.
One of the avenues of argumentation along this line has been Jeremy Rifkin and a guy named Stewart, I'm spacing on his first name, but they filed a patent with the U.S. Patent Office about 10 years ago for a Humanzee, a human chimpanzee genetic combination, and fought that case for a long time, and the U.S. Patent Office has never granted them a patent on that. And they were trying to get the patent office to make a distinction about what a human is on the grounds that you wouldn't be able to patent a human, but you would be able to patent a non-human. That always seemed to me, you know, fundamentally wrong-headed because from the GAAP perspective, what's at stake is sentience and not humanness. If the Humanzee had sentience, it should be protected, and if it didn't, it shouldn't. Is that kind of genetic experimentation something that GAAP has given any attention to and its potential future consequences?
That isn't something that we have focused on. And again, it's more of a broad approach. And if you're looking at something that is not going to be a chimpanzee as well as a human as well as a gorilla, is something that should be treated as an individual. And if this is not something that's going to be beneficial to that individual, then it's something we would be opposed to. The goal with the Great Ape Project is to recognize that we need to look at our definitions and maybe take away some of those definitions that draw distinctions that really aren't well-founded. We used to say, well, the difference between humans and apes is that humans use tools, and then that was shown to be an error. And we have to constantly redefine what the difference is between humans and apes, and what we're finding is there's really not that much of a difference when you look at the things that we deem morally significant. They don't look like us, but then again, there are a lot of human beings that don't look a lot like each other.
Let's pursue that line about doing things to individual apes which don't benefit them. I mean, that as a principle of research ethics, that's been clearly established, and it's one of the parts of the Great Ape Declaration that they should be free from torture. And since apes can't consent to research, then they shouldn't be subject to any kind of painful or harmful research. On the other hand, there are forms of research which could be of potential benefit to individual apes and to apes in general. For instance, ethological behavioral research that's done in the lab could, or research on teaching apes language could potentially empower them in some sense, give them cognitive tools they didn't have otherwise. Do you make a distinction there between different kinds of laboratory research?
Well, yes, there is a difference because, again, it's a situation where, ideally, the great apes would be in the wild and they would be able to live as they choose to live. However, to the extent that they aren't able to be, there are some apes, if they've been taken from the wild, they can't be returned. Or if they've been born in captivity, then it wouldn't be in their interest to return them to the wild where they would be exposed to different kinds of illnesses and different kinds of things that they're not used to. So certainly, there are, in particular, sanctuaries where the primary goal, the primary focus is what is beneficial to the ape that is there in their care. And then certainly they would have researchers that come and observe the behavior and observe what's going on and possibly teach some of the great apes different things like saying sign language. And we've found that, you know, many of the great apes enjoy being taught different things. They enjoy learning. They enjoy a challenge because they're much like humans. They want to be challenged. They don't want to live a boring existence. So certainly there are many things that can be done that provide information that is beneficial, and so you could call it research, but it's also beneficial to that individual as well as beneficial to the species.
Well, let me push that one step further then, because Johns Hopkins recently sponsored a group of bioethicists who issued, I think it was a group of about 15 different bioethicists, who issued a position paper on experimentation on great apes that would enhance their cognitive abilities, so genetic or hormonal or other kinds of experimentation. And they got very nervous with the idea that you might make an ape smart as a human being or be able to do all of the cognitive things a human being would do. And that would seem to me to be actually along the lines of the kinds of beneficial research that you know, otherwise you would do just by teaching them new skills. I know you don't have a position on it, and I know it's a kind of out of left field kind of question. But this research is actually imminent in the sense that we now have the full chimp map, we have the full human genome map. We know what these very few genetic differences are between the two. We might be able to do some kind of genetic modification of chimpanzees to enhance their vocal abilities or to enhance their cognitive abilities.
Yeah, that's a hard one. We have not taken a position on that issue in particular, and it does become quite an interesting philosophical bioethical question, and I would imagine would be a great debate. I can think of arguments both for and against it as we're sitting here. And I think the overriding principle needs to be, I think it begs the question, what are we trying to do in that we're constantly comparing these great apes to human beings as if human beings are the superior intellectual being out there, whereas, you know, many people might believe that there's intelligent life in outer space. And, you know, everybody finds it easy to accept that aliens might be more intelligent than human beings, but yet we want to assume that we're the most intelligent creatures on Earth, yet we're destroying our habitat, and we're doing so many damaging things, and the apes live in peace and don't have any natural enemies except for humans.
That raises this question of whether we can learn some things from our study of the apes about how to behave ourselves. And there's this wonderful book. I'm spacing on the name of the author. He's Dutch, and he wrote about the bonobos.
The bonobos. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the bonobos apparently have this very pacifist culture and are very sexually liberated. And there's been a lot of suggestion on the part of people sympathetic to that, you know, that kind of a culture that we should learn more from the bonobos. I mean, is that something that seems to be consistent with the argument you're making?
Yeah, I think that we can learn a lot from the different species. I mentioned earlier I've done some work with gorillas and chimpanzees in particular, and I've personally learned a lot from gorillas. They're very peaceful, very caring species. And, you know, it's very interesting. I always say that gorillas possess so many of the good qualities that humans have, but very few of the bad ones. And, you know, there's a lot, I think, that we can learn from their peaceful existence and their interest in preservation. And, you know, gorillas are well known for not destroying their habitat and moving from one area to another very logically, very methodically to make sure that there's food regrowth and that they have plenty of opportunity. And they stay in their own groups and they don't, you know, there's very little strife amongst them. So certainly, and the bonobos as well have a very peaceful type of existence.
Let's talk a little bit about the Great Ape Projects as an activist organization and how people can connect to it. Tell us how, what chapters there are and how people can contact you and so forth.
We have chapters throughout the world. Our main office is in Seattle. I'm here in Atlanta. The best way to contact us is through our website, which is greatapeproject.org. We're actually one of the things that, since I've become the new president, we've really started to look at the Great Ape Project from a business perspective, have developed a new business plan, and one of the first things that we've been really working on is getting our website updated because we had found that there were a few links that were linked to old email addresses. So we're in the process of really revamping that and providing more opportunities through the website, volunteer opportunities as well as information. The Great Ape Project really sees itself as an opportunity to provide information and provide support for a lot of organizations out there. We have so many organizations that have common goals going in different directions, and we would like to see a lot of those organizations come together and work towards those common goals and able to provide support for that.
Of the other organizations that are working on habitat preservation or animal rights, is there any friction over the philosophic perspective of the Great Ape Project around focusing on the question of sentience? I can see a more radical animal rights position of, you know, that all animals are equal to human beings and that there shouldn't be these kinds of invidious distinctions among them, that they might take, some umbrage at the Great Ape Project's strategic perspective.
Well, and I think that there is some organizations have some concern about that and have felt that we were possibly trying to exclude other animals and support only protections for the great apes. And I think that once they realize that really what we're trying to do, we see ourselves more as opening a door and providing a bridge, because we have to face it. There are many, many people who are not open to the idea of legal rights or legal protections for any animals. And if we can start to allow people to see and to recognize that, wait a second, this is a species that deserves to have these protections, then they might start recognizing that about other species as well.
Michelle, it's been wonderful to have you on the line, and I've been speaking with Michelle Stumpy. She's the president of the Great Ape Project, which can be found at greatapeproject.org. She's an attorney in Atlanta and the principal in Avindi Incorporated. Thanks so much for joining us, and can people contact you directly?
Yes, they can. My email address is mlstumpy, S-T-U-M-P-E, at Avindi, E as in egg, V as in Victor, I, N as in Nancy, D as in dog, I.com. And they can also reach us on the Great Ape Project website.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future, brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes, the host and producer of Change Surfer Radio and executive director of the IEET. If you want to learn more about the techno-progressive perspective of Change Surfer Radio and the IEET, or you want to share your thoughts about our programs, email me at director@IEET.org. You can find the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies at IEET.org. You can subscribe to a weekly podcast of Change Surfer Radio and listen to or download all of our shows since 1998, thanks to the Infos Radio Project at the Change Surfer website at changesurfer.com. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.